Hi, everybody. This is Stephen Key and Andrew Krauss. We have a special guest today that, Nancy, how do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry.
It's Tedeschi.
Tedeschi.
Okay.
I met Nancy a few years ago at an inventor conference, and guess what? She has done a wonderful job since then. She's got a product that looks like it's going to be a huge hit, and I'm so proud to have her on. And we're going to ask some questions, and hopefully everybody can benefit from some of these questions on her journey being an entrepreneur slash inventor and what it takes to bring a product to market. So I'm going to jump in, Nancy. First of all, tell us a little bit about your product, what it is, and how you came up with it.
Okay, my product is actually, it originally started out to be an optical screw in the optical industry and has actually grown into bigger things for assemblies and machines and different size screws, fasteners. But how I came up with the idea was that my mother was over in Nicaragua and she was doing some missionary work, and she actually broke her glasses. And in the process of breaking her glasses, she had no way to fix them. So she took her earring out of her ear and she stuck it through the hinge of the eyeglasses, and she had this dangly bead hanging from her eyeglasses, and she kept it there and she wore it. She went to India and Japan, and the jewelers would stop her on the street and ask her where she got this dangly ear, you know, charm. So about a year after she did that, she came to me and she said, you know, you need to invent charms for glasses. And at the time, I owned a title insurance company in upstate New York, and I've always been entrepreneurial. In 1990, I started working for myself, and I've never worked for anybody since then. So when she did this, I said, you know, this is kind of cute. Maybe I'll try it. So that was my venture to becoming an entrepreneur slash inventor. And I actually have a patent, two of them actually, on the charms, and I have PCT International patent on them, and they're being examined all over the world. And it's actually a product that I think will do well, but in the process of developing it, I was dealing with those tiny screws in the glasses, and I'm like, oh my God, how could anyone do this? And then I started thinking about the optometrist and, you know, how do they use these little tiny screws every day? And one day I just had one of those aha moments, and I thought of a screw. Ooh, did I lose you?
No, we're still here. We'll still here.
Okay. So anyway, my product is a screw that has actually a feeder tab on it. And the feeder tab is what we call it. It acts as a guide to guide into a hole. So if you have a small place where you have to insert a screw, it actually helps you align it and guide it in, and then you screw the screw down and snap off the feeder tab.
So basically with feeder tab, it's a little pole that attaches to the screw, and you stick that in there. It lets you get into a very small hole in the eyeglass hinge. And then once you put that in, you thread it, then you snap off this little pole on the end, and then you've got your screw in your sunglass, in your eyeglasses, without all the hassle of that tiny little thing.
Yeah, and the couple of the features of this screw that it's made of stainless steel, and so a lot of times when you break your glasses, you actually strip the hinge, and because my screw is made of stainless steel, it will actually recut the threads. So you would just take a screw that's one size bigger, and you screw it in, and it will recut the threads. So even if you strip your hinge, this screw will actually recut the threads. And also the guide on it, the feeder tab, a lot of times you have spring-loaded glasses, and when you break your glasses, the spring will pop back in, so it comes out of alignment. And if you take the little feeder tab and you go in at an angle, it actually grabs the spring and brings the spring back into alignment.
Nice.
Very cool.
I think it's brilliant, Andrew. What do you think?
I think it's fantastic. I think we put this up wherever we put it up. We'll make sure to put that video right up next to it, the YouTube video.
That's great. Well, tell me this. How many stores are you currently in, Nancy? Because I know it's starting to grow a little bit. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I think that probably was the hard part of the journey, is figuring out that. I mean, the invention part of it, to me now, in retrospect, was the easy part of this process. It's getting it to the market that is the most difficult process. And right now I'm actually selling in Walgreens, Rite Aid, Office Depot, Giant Eagle, True Value, Ace Hardware, Bartels, Bi-Mart, Bi-Mart. And I'm right now negotiating with Publix, CVS, and I actually was at Walmart 2 weeks ago and met with them.
Did you, and maybe I should have asked this at the very beginning, are you doing everything yourself? Did you license it? Or are you manufacturing it yourself?
I'm doing it myself.
Wow. So how do you, okay, first of all, okay, this is very interesting. Are you nervous at all?
Now? No.
Were you nervous at the very beginning?
Oh, my God. I was the most depressed I've ever been in my life. I actually went into therapy after 3.5 years of pure depression.
Did you have a business plan when you started out? And are you working
from
one now?
No.
How did you start? I mean, did you just said, hey, I'm going to do this? How did you get the right information to minimize some of the risk that you knew you were going to be taking?
Well, sometimes I feel like I'm having an outer body experience, to be honest with you, because, you know, I made mistakes, and I don't know if you want me to go into those mistakes.
Sure, or, absolutely.
You know, my first thing that I did was I actually went to a mechanical design engineer and told him what my idea was, because I had no background in fasteners or anything, and I said, can that work? And he said, yeah, that's actually pretty clever. He says, I don't know if anyone can make it, but I can draw it. So I had him draw it, and I have the drawings, and I Googled, you know, Google's my best friend. I Googled optical screw manufacturers, and I found a manufacturer, and actually I was in Albany, New York at the time. He was in Rochester. And I drove to Rochester to his facility and showed him the screw. Now, this guy is a third-generation optical screw maker, and he said to me, holy, you know what? He goes, I can't believe this. So he actually made my prototypes for me. I mean, they were actually not, I guess you would call them prototypes, but they were the real screw. And that's how the whole process for me started. But then have the screw now, what the heck do you do with it? And that was my most depressing times, when I had no way to figure out what to do next.
Okay, before we get there, Nancy, let's talk a little bit about, was that expensive to hire this person to build that your prototype or the real deal for you?
Well, because my product's so little, you know, I spent about $5,000.
Okay. Did he give you that money? How did you go about? Well, you found this guy, but was there a contract? Did he sign an NDA? What did you do to protect yourself? And how did you get the price quote for him to do that for you?
Okay. Well, originally, as soon as I thought of the idea, I actually filed my own provisional patent application, and when I filed that, you know, it had changed a couple of times from the time. I mean, I just kept thinking, and I kept filing provisionals, believe it or not. I think I filed 3. And so I had my provisional, and I had an NDA and a confidentiality agreement signed by him before I met with him.
Okay. And so how long did it take for him to build your product, your prototype? Was it weeks or months? Or?
No, it was about 2.5 weeks.
Okay. Did he make more than one? Did he give you a handful?
Oh, yes. I think I ordered 10,000.
Okay. And were they, when you first got to 10,000, did you have to make changes, or did they work right off the
They worked right off the bat. This guy knew what he was doing. The only thing that I've changed since that particular day is I've actually changed, because there's two industries for my product. There's the optical industry, and then there's the consumer market. Mm-hmm. And the optical screws are a little different than the consumer screws as far as sizes and stuff. So they, I changed the material. I was making it in an alloyed nickel, and I've changed it to stainless because of what I've learned about stainless.
How important was it finding the right guy
that my God.
Knew a lot about the industry. How important was that?
I think that it was really important, because if I would have not found him or found somebody who knew what they were doing, I would have had no way to make my screw, because I wouldn't have known what to do.
Okay. And how did you said you he was local or the next town over, and how did you find him again? Was it Google or the Yellow Pages?
I Googled him, and he was about 4 hours from my house.
Did you meet with him, or did you just talk with the phone?
I drove to his facility.
Okay. So once you've got these 10,000 now, what do you do now?
Well, I went to a trade show, and I went to, it's called Vision Expo, and it was at the Javits Center in New York City, and I just walked the show to try and figure out, you know, what my next move was, and obviously I didn't show it at the show. I didn't, you know, I just got contacts and stuff.
Okay. Was it easy to get contacts at the show? Did you just walk up? What did you say?
Well, I just walked up to people that were selling screws and just said that, you know, I was new to the industry and, you know, I'd like to get their contact information and contact them after the show.
Well, you seem pretty outgoing. Was it easy? Did they receive you well? Or
well,
did
you
they...
know, at a trade show, they're all trying to sell their own product. So, I mean, one thing I've learned as an inventor is don't go to a trade show to think that you're going to sell your product to the people that are trying to make a living on the trade show.
You're trying to sell the people that are paid a lot of money for that booth to sell other people. And so,
right.
So what's your tip there then?
Well, I would say, you know, for me, I went to find out, you know, one of the things I did find out, which I think you guys will appreciate, is that not only does, and this is only from researching at the trade show how glasses are put together. And I found out two things at the trade show that were very helpful to me. One is that the optical screw that I make can not only be used for the hinge, but when you buy a pair of glasses, you have lenses in them. And the lenses come with dummy lenses. And the optician has to, on a lot of the glasses, open up that lens, put the lens in, and then put the screw back in. And they can use my screw to also form that, do that.
How did you learn that, Nancy?
Just from talking to people at the show, and there were different size screws where some had little heads and some had bigger heads. And I asked questions like, why does that have a smaller head than that head?
Well, Nancy, I have a question for you. How important was it that you asked a lot of dumb questions to get smart, or good questions, I guess, is the
well
way.
Yeah, well, they, you know, it is a dumb it, well, I guess
it's not dumb at all, but
yeah, but it was so important, because I made a second application fit my product just from asking those questions. I mean, we all think we know everything. I'm convinced of that, too. I mean, all inventors think they know everything. You know, and the more I learn, the dumber I become, because I realize there's so much more.
What did you do next, Nancy? Let's move on. You went to the trade show. You learned a lot about how you could use your invention two different ways. But what do you do now?
Well, now I actually contacted a magazine was an optical magazine. The company was called Vision Monday. And I told them, I said, you know, by this time I had filed my patent applications all over the place. And I said that I had had a new screw that I invented and would like to see how I could get in their magazine. And in their magazine, they had a little section called What's New? And they posted, and I'm not kidding you, a picture about the size, 3/4 of a business card of my screw. And it was, they said something like, iEgo invents screw to make repairs easier. And it was a little blurb in the magazine. And about a week later, I got a phone call from an optometrist in Long Island. And he says to me, is this what I think it is? And I said, I don't know. What is it? And he goes, well, I got this magazine and I see this picture of this screw. He says, I've been doing this for 35 years. I've never seen anything like it. He goes, can you send me some? And I said, sure. And then he asked me a lot of questions about, was I an engineer, an optometrist? He said he'd been doing this for 35 years, and if this works the way he thinks it works, he can't believe he didn't think of it, and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I sent him some samples, and that was the beginning of the what happened to me in the optical industry, because this guy, he fell in love with this screw. He contacted a company for me that he bought his supplies from. I got an appointment with this company, and I ended up signing an exclusive distribution agreement with this company. They gave me $100,000 up front, and they can distribute only in the United States for me. And that's how I started.
Tell me this, Nancy. Do you think it helped you not – did it help you that you weren't from this industry to see – to make this innovation?
You know, that's an interesting question and a real good one. From the knowledge that I have now, I say absolutely, because they were not thinking outside the box in that industry. They had these little screws, and they learned to deal with them on a daily basis. They had tools that held them, tools that cut them, filed them, and they never thought. And that's one of the things this optometrist said to me. You know, we've never thought to invent the screw. We've always worked on the tools to work with the screws. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, because I was an outside-the-box thinker to begin with, and that was such a difficult process. I'm one of those people that if there's something out there that is hard to do, I'm constantly thinking about ways to change it.
I want to go back to the manufacturing for just a minute. I've got to ask a couple more questions before we move on. When you showed it to that first, this first prototyper, did you have a drawing or anything else or a sketch? I mean, what did you show him for him
I
to make
actually
it?
I had an engineer draw them for me, a mechanical engineer. So okay. I have those pictures. Okay. I
did. And how much were those? Do you remember?
Oh, by time was all and said and done by using this guy, he helped me with my other patent with the charms, but I'm going to say probably for that portion of it was about $5,000.
Okay. So, and the guy that made the first 10,000, who is he manufacturing these for you now?
No.
Who's
good
manufacturing?
Friend of mine, though. He's a very good friend.
Who's manufacturing for you?
I have two factories over in China.
How'd you find them?
I found them through my optical distributor out of Long Island, has been buying supplies there, and they introduced me to one of them. And the other one of them, actually, I found myself by doing research on Alibaba and through Google. Okay.
Tell me this, your distributor that had those relationships, so that's one way you got. That was a distributor, you signed the licensing deal or distributor deal, gave you $100,000. Was that the same one that helped you with the manufacturing?
Yes.
Okay. And let's talk about Alibaba for just a minute. Good things, bad things? Did it run smoothly?
Well, you know, it's a foreign language, you know. You have to figure out what it is that you're looking for. But, you know, I think Alibaba, you know, helped me a lot because there's a lot of, I mean, you got to be careful too, you know, and I'll emphasize that. I mean, you can't just go to Alibaba if you're not protected.
Okay.
For our listeners, Alibaba.com is a website where you can find manufacturers overseas that can make products for you.
Tell me this. Let's quickly move on because I love this. Thank you so much for this information, Nancy. All right, so you've got some money up front. You've got a distributor that's got great relationships, helped you with the manufacturing of it. You got $100,000. What do you do now? What do you do about packaging? Who did the branding and everything else?
Me. I actually have a girlfriend that's a web designer, and we had gone through a couple of different phases of the packaging and, you know, colors and stuff like that, but she actually designed the packaging, and we put it together. Well, first of all, let's go back a minute. The packaging for the optical screws are way different than the packaging for my consumer market. So the packaging for the optical portion of it was actually thought of by my distributor. And he packages 50 screws in a vial, and then they have a wheel that they use that they have 250 screws in it, and they're 10 different sizes. Mm-hmm. So if you want to look at those at any point, you can go to OptiSource International and go to their frame parts and go look in their frame parts, and you'll find Snap-It. And they actually sell 26 different sizes of Snap-It screws.
When you were working with the manufacturer overseas, I guess I'm going to go back to that again because there's so many questions with that. What was your first order? I mean, how many did you have to order overseas? What was your minimum quantity?
Well, now that I have good relationships, I don't have one. But in the beginning, I think my first order was, I could go back and look, but I think it was around $33,000 cost.
Okay. Did when they arrived, did you use... Were they sent to your distributor, or were they sent to you? Did you use a freight forwarder? Did you use QC people? How did you do all that if you're here in the United States?
I know. It's like when I talk to you, I actually appreciate what I've done more than when I on a day-to-day basis, because it's kind of crazy. But anyway, I work with my distributor is that they'll send me a purchase order. And then I generate a purchase order for my factory in China. And because of the relationship I have with my distributor, which is awesome, I can't say enough good things about them. I got really, really lucky, and I should tell you a story in the process of that, because I did go to another one, and they've ended up copying my screw, and now I've got to file an infringement. But we'll get to that later. But anyway, so I do the purchase order, then they make the screws, and then the screws go right to my distributor.
Okay. Tell me this. Do they handle all the shipments to get it there on time? And do you have anybody over there, QC, make sure they're okay? Or
I do. I actually have a company, another distributor, that distributes some of my consumer products. That actually has a company. He has a company here in the United States, and he actually has a company in China. He's actually the guy that invented the cable clamps, and he has a QC department, and he'll order kits from me, and I actually mm-hmm. allow him to pick them up in China. But they have a QC department, and they check for me the quality.
Okay. How important is that in your opinion?
In China, it's very important.
Have you ever gone over there yourself to visit the factory?
I have not yet, but I'm going in April.
Okay. So do you run everything out of a big fancy office?
No, I run everything out of my house.
Cool.
Do you, when you set up, okay, are you, what type of business entity are you?
I'm an LLC.
Okay. Why did you choose that?
My accountant chose it for me, but I'm getting to the point where I'm probably going to change that.
Why is that?
Just protection.
Okay. So you're running this out of your home. Does it take up all your house? Who stores your inventory? I know the distributor takes it, but what about your other stuff for your consumer products? Where does that go?
I actually have a warehouse. I actually have a warehouse in Seattle.
Okay. So who runs all that for you out in Seattle?
I have a warehouse that I've hired to actually, they pick my product up at the shore in the, you know, on the container, mm-hmm. and they bring the container and store, and then they actually do my shipping.
They do your
fulfillment. So when I get a purchase order from like a Rite Aid or something, mm-hmm. I just put it through to them and they ship it. I do invoicing myself.
So they do all your fulfillment for you. How'd you find those, Nancy?
Google.
Wow. And that fulfillment center must do a lot of different products, and they're pretty good at it.
They do. It's huge. It's huge.
Okay.
It's probably one of the largest ones on the West Coast.
So they manage your inventory. They ship it for you. They do everything. How do you talk to these guys daily, or is it how often?
It's a lot of by email.
Okay.
Pretty much email, but they're, you know, I do talk to them when I have an issue or a problem.
Is it like a warm and fuzzy, you got one contact person, or is it more like whoever answers it and they're kind of big and impersonal?
No, they're very personable, and they actually have a team that I've been assigned to.
Nice.
There's never been a time where I've called this place and haven't got a return call within, I'm not kidding, 15, 30 minutes.
Do you have any employees?
I have an assistant.
How do you set up, give us the, paint us the picture of your office for us.
It's got three desks in it, and a copy machine, and a scanner, and a filing cabinet, and I have two computers on my desk, and my assistant has one on her desk, and I got patents hanging up all over the place.
So how early do you start in the morning?
I exercise every morning, so I don't get to my desk until about probably 10:30.
And how late do you work?
Depends on what needs to be done. Sometimes around the clock, sometimes a couple of hours.
You come a long way in a very short period of time, haven't you?
I've been told that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to the packaging. How did you work with the manufacturer with your the products that's in the Walgreens? Did you send them over a spec? And how did that all work? And did that work
funny.
Right?
I went to Safeway, honest to God, and I started looking at packaging, you know? And I'm like thinking to myself, okay, what do I need? So I actually bought a thing of crazy glue that had a heat-sealed cardstock, thing. And I'm like, well, this is all I need. So I actually had my web girl, she designed the cardstock, and I sent it to China and told them what I wanted to heat-seal the tube onto the front of it, and they'd made me samples.
Okay, wonderful. So you made the sample, you sent it over, and it just came back looking great, no problems?
Not a problem, not one. I've actually had it translated in different languages now.
Wonderful. What? Let's talk about, there's so many questions here. Let's talk about cash flow, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How difficult is it to manage? I mean, of course you have startup money, right? Do you have a ballpark figure of how much it costs to not only protect your idea? I know you've got PCT filings and you've got patents. If you were to put everything together, what did you start out with, how much money, and what do you think you've invested so far to get it up and running?
I've invested $250,000.
Where'd you get the money?
I had some and borrowed some from my mom.
Okay, so you're self-financed. Would you recommend that to other people?
It depends on how comfortable you are with borrowed money. I've made all my money back. I plus some. I'm like way in the right zone, you know, or whatever you call it, the black zone.
Mm-hmm.
But I am one of those people that is very uncomfortable borrowing money.
How many nights did you stay up worrying about if this was all going to work?
Too many. And lost a lot of weight, and which was good actually, and freaked out daily.
Okay.
For like years, not just a day or a month, but a couple of years.
Okay. So
what about it was making you freak out, Nancy? Like, what are all the, what's going through your head?
It's like
money.
Oh my God, my whole life savings is tied up in this thing. And, you know, if it doesn't go, how am I going to make a living for the rest of my life? But, you know, I always find a way, but when you're in that zone where you've invested all your time and money, and, I mean, it's like having a baby. It's like my kid. It's like I say to my son all the time, ego's overtaking you.
Is there a way, in now that you've gone through this, to minimize some of the risk?
I would say that from what I know now, I would definitely have sat down with somebody who has done what I've done before I even started the process.
Okay.
And go through a lot of questions. Just the questions you're asking me are questions that need to be asked up front before you. I mean, I'm a risk taker, obviously. You can tell by talking to me. I've been a risk taker all my life. But, you know, if you, you know, there's a way to be a risk taker and minimize the risk. And that's education.
It is. How much, when you first started, I mean, how much did you know about, number one, you know, a balance sheet or income statement or, you know, break-even analysis? I mean, how much of that stuff did you know? I know you know it now, but what about at the very beginning?
Well, I owned a title insurance company, so I had my own books at the time.
Okay. So you're pretty comfortable with looking at that and trying to realize, all right, you know, I've got to at least document what I'm doing and see at the end of the day if I'm making any money.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, you realized that at the end of the day, your income statement, you knew your cost of your goods. You knew what it was going to. You knew what. Well, wait a minute. Before we jump there, I'm sorry. I'm jumping too far ahead. How did you determine the retail price?
I actually, you know, and that's another difficult question, because when you have a product that is innovative like this, you got to figure out what the price point is, because you don't have competition, obviously, if you get patents. You know, and mine's such a simple product that I don't see a way around my patents, okay? It's the snap-off portion of my screw that's the big patent portion of my screw. So I went and I looked at what was on the shelves and figured, you know what? If they can sell it for two, I can sell it for four. I mean, it was just an in-head kind of thing.
So retail price now?
Well, average retail, it suggested, is $4.98, but what Walgreens is selling it for is $3.99.
Okay. Was there a formula that you thought, okay, I can sell this for $4.99, and you looked at what the cost was to produce it? Was there a formula that someone shared that with you, like it was five times the cost, or you just said, hey, hopefully I make some money here?
Well, you know, I knew what my distributor was selling the screws to the optometrist for, so I had a starting point.
Okay.
You know, and they're getting 39 cents per screw.
Okay.
So I have five screws in my kit. So if you take five times the 40 cents, you got $2 that they're selling it for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually backed into my price. I figured out what was going to cost me to make it. I figured out what the shipping costs were per container. Mm-hmm. Tax, you know, the duty tax.
Okay.
And what my warehouse was going to charge me per piece.
Okay.
And I backed into the number.
Got it.
I got a question for you, Nancy. Do you need to be careful when you sell to distributors or to retailers that you sell to one company or distributor and then they undercut the price and then you make a certain retailer mad, or you sell to one cheaper than the other? How do you work all that?
Yeah, I know. That's a good
It can be a real problem, can it?
It is a real problem, because I just met with Walmart, you know, and, you know, I'm selling it to Walgreens for a certain price, and I want to protect the integrity of that price because I'm fair, and I don't think that it's right that somebody gets it for a different price. So I guess the answer to your question is I have not yet done that, and I would probably lose Walmart even if I had to lose Walmart, because I believe in my heart of hearts that those little screws are going away eventually.
Tell me this, Nancy. Let's get back to the income statement for just a minute, okay? So you've got your retail price, you know what the cost of your product's going to be, you know what your expenses are. So when you finally did the math and you looked at your gross margin, were you happy with that? Did you
make
a mistake?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay, beautiful. Okay. So it wasn't like you had this formula, you kind of worked it backwards, but the numbers seemed to work. That's what you're telling us?
Yes.
Okay. Looking back, looking what you know today, would you have done it any differently?
You know, it's interesting. That's another good question. I would say to know what I know now, no.
Okay. Do you think that if you were to price it at $6.99, would they be selling?
They're selling them at $10 at an airport in Charlotte, and yes, they're selling. But, you know, when you're in an airport and sure. you break your glasses, I guess you'll spend $10.
You need to fix it. So how are you now getting into – how did you get into the first couple stores? Did you call them yourself? That's one question. They're smaller retailers. But then how did you get into the big boys like the Walgreens?
I found salespeople.
How'd you find them?
My Walgreens, one I found at a trade show, the houseware show, last year. And then just LinkedIn and research and trying to find out what vendors brought in what stuff. I'd go to stores and look on the bottom of packaging and see who was distributing it, picked up the phone and called them. I'm really lucky because I have a product that pretty much people get excited about it, you know?
Sells itself.
Yeah.
So the manufacturer's reps that you're using now, do you pay, is it a standard commission? You pay them all the same price or does it change with volume?
Nope, I pay them all the same price. And actually, I have two different ways of doing it. I actually have vendors that will bring it in for me. So I don't have to be a vendor for certain stores, and some stores I'm a vendor for. And if they're a vendor for me, then they just buy the product from me and bring it in through their own, you know, their own vendor numbers.
So you've got in your pricing, you just built in paying a distributor or manufacturing rep right from the very beginning.
Yeah, I actually have distributor's price. I have, small retailers like mom-and-pop shops. Okay. And then I have a mass retail price.
All right, so you do it through. Okay, very good. So getting into Walmart, how are you doing that? Was that a manufacturer's rep that's got you in there?
Not this time. I actually hired a guy, but he never got me there. But I was able to find a guy who worked for Walmart for many years, and he actually brings products in, and he got me the interview. So I flew there a couple weeks ago, actually.
How nervous were you about that meeting?
I wasn't. I'm not. I'm so over being all of that.
I mean, you know, Walmart, come on. Walmart's the giant.
You know what? Walmart is the giant. But I don't, you know, don't write this, but I don't care. Honestly. To me, it's like it's going so well that eventually I think that it'll be there anyway. Okay. I'm so much more patient than I ever used to be.
Okay. So let's talk about, let me see, we've covered a lot. Can you tell me?
You know, you're sick of me yet, Steve?
No, I'm fascinated by you. I'm in awe that you're the perfect person to have in this new book, One Simple Idea for Startups. I think you've got a simple idea. It's very clever. I think you are a person that has figured it out on your own. You have navigated the risk, and you're very fair, you're competitive, and you're doing everything yourself. You have full control. I think you've got an amazing story. So how are you – do you do your own press releases?
I mean, do.
How do you get – and how does that work? How do you – do you just contact someone? Do you send them a press release? Do you get on the phone? How does that work for you? What do you do?
I get on the phone, and I don't quit until I get to the person. And, you know, it's funny because, you know – the guy in Tampa here wrote a story about a month or so ago about me in the paper here. And I was on the front page of the newspaper. I couldn't believe it when I got the paper. I'm like, oh, my God. And then he some guy wrote a couple of days later, wrote a, you know how they, what do they call those editor things? He wrote the editor and it was all about me. And they published that a couple of days later. It was about my tenacity and stuff. But I pick up the phone and call. But this, the Huffington Post and Matt Bishop, I was reading the Entrepreneur magazine about a month ago. And in the magazine, it talked about this website called CharityBuzz.com. Mm-hmm. CharityBuzz.com auctions off prizes. So you bid on them. You actually bid on them. And one of the prizes that you bid it on was having lunch with the editors of the Huffington Post. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, what could that get me? Mm-hmm. Am I going to spend $2,000 to do that, or am I going to spend $2,000 to go to a trade show? Mm-hmm. You know? So I elected to bid on it, and I bid it until I won it.
You are amazing. When you pitch your product, do you pitch your story or the product or both?
Well, I just started a blog called nancytedeschi.com because I've been conned into doing it because people said that I had a good story and that I should promote myself, and then the promoting of myself will bring people to my product. So that's a new venture that I just started about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think given my experience, when you tell a story such as your story, that's newsworthy, and then they'll talk about your product. If you just told them about your product, then they're going to take out an ad or something like that. So I think whoever gave you that advice, I think they're spot on. Nancy, is there anything that you can leave with us that if someone was starting out like you, that had a great simple idea and wanted to go down this journey, what advice would you give them?
Buckle up. You know, buckle up, because I don't know now and how to, if I was going to give somebody advice, I would tell them to call me. Honestly, call me and let me tell you about my journey.
So find a mentor.
Find a mentor.
Find someone that's walked the walk, that knows what they're talking about, that can at least give you. Does that, Nancy, tell me this though. Because you didn't know what was ahead of you, you didn't know the good things or the bad things, you didn't know, you just jumped in. What happens if you know all those things? You think that that would make people hesitant to even try something if they knew what was ahead?
Oh, yeah. That's a big yes. Okay. I mean, it is. It's scary. I mean, it's a scary, lonely process. And the advice that I would give somebody, further advice with the mentoring, make sure your mentor actually has done the job before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure they have products on the shelves. Make sure what they say is what they are.
Make sure they're the real deal.
Yeah, there's not a lot of real deals out there.
I would agree. And you're one of the real deals. Nancy, I cannot thank you enough.